You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Obviously, I am not Tom Hartman.
Nor are you Dr. Mike.
Or Leslie Marshall.
Or Leslie Marshall. Surprise!
It is the change-up here on the Tom Hartman Program. Lots of interesting hosts this week.
It's the variety pack.
Yes.
It's been a great week.
It's like the big box of Crayola crayons.
The 64-pack.
Yes.
We all saw it when we were young.
Danielle and Shano sitting in for Tom today. We also host a show called Talking Left, which you can check out if you're so inclined at talkingleft.com. Lots of big stuff in the news today, Shane.
And it is Anything Goes Friday.
It is Anything Goes Friday, just like Tom. And we have some great guests as well that we're going to be...
Who do we have coming up?
We have Andrew Crocker of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, David Bender of Progressive Voices, and Desi Doyen of the Green News Report coming up
very cool
later today.
Very cool.
But, of course, the super huge news this week was the Supreme Court and their
Third ruling.
Yes.
Third ruling on voter suppression laws.
Somewhat confusing rulings because, we had Ohio, North Carolina, and Wisconsin, and they didn't all go in the same direction.
Right. It was a week ago Monday that we got our first ruling from the Supreme Court. It was a very tiny little ruling.
Yes.
It was like a half a page ruling. No reasoning whatsoever saying, Ohio, you can go right ahead and you can suppress the vote in Ohio. Okay. We were very upset by this, and a week went by, and then this past Wednesday, North Carolina's came up before the Supreme Court, and yet again, please, North Carolina, go right ahead. You can suppress the vote. But then last night, they issued a ruling in Wisconsin saying, no, you can't suppress in Wisconsin. Very confusing.
It is.
But it isn't.
It is very confusing to us laymen who are not, experts in the Supreme Court.
Shane, it's not even really an expert.
How can they justify, two different directional rulings, some allowing voter suppression laws, some striking down voter suppression laws? I mean, what reasoning were the conservative members of the Supreme Court using?
Well, we actually don't have any reasoning because, like I said, they didn't put a whole lot of reasoning in. Now, last night we got a little peek into three of their reasoning. But if you think about it this way, there's 9 justices on the Supreme Court.
Right.
It takes 5 votes for anything to happen. If it's more than 5, then great. But you can break up the Supreme Court when it comes to these rulings into 3 groups, generally. You have the less conservative or the so-called liberal justices who are essentially saying in all these rulings, let people vote.
Right.
Let them vote. So they're the same all the way across. Then you have the Chief Justice and Justice Kennedy who are essentially saying, don't, and this is where we kind of get into what Samuel Alito said in the ruling, in his dissent last night, that Roberts and Kennedy are saying you can't make any changes to the laws this close to the election. And that's how you can get both ways, because all of these changes, all of these rulings would have changed in Ohio, in North Carolina, would have changed the rules too close to election, and in Wisconsin would have changed it too close to the election. Then you have the hyper-conservative justices who are saying we don't want anyone to vote ever.
I've heard that somewhere before.
Well, yeah, someone had kind of described their dissents last night, and it kind of goes like this.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So that, of course, that was Paul Wayrick.
Oh, and here I thought that was like Scalia or Alito.
But there is only one way you can actually justify the justices in every single case. These are the conservative justices saying no to voting rights in every single case.
And that is?
And that is that they want less people to vote. There's no legal reasoning. Now, I put the reasoning on the other side. The liberals all say let people vote.
Right.
Kennedy and Roberts, from what we can glean from what little is written about
this. Read from the tea leaves?
Are essentially saying, don't change the rules this close to the election. And Thomas, Alito, Scalia are saying, we don't want people voting. I think that's really what it comes down to in these cases, because the way it lined up is in Ohio, you had rules that were in place until just up till September. And these court rulings said, no, you can't suppress.
The appeals court ruling.
The appeals court's ruling. So you were changing the rules within a month or two of the election. Same thing in North Carolina. They were in place all the way up until about a month and a half ago. You can't change it that close. In Wisconsin, they had been struck down back in April. All right. So there was no voting suppression until a couple days ago when the appellate court said, no, you can reinstitute those. So what Roberts and Kennedy are saying is don't change the rules so close to the election.
Right. And in the case of Wisconsin, you were going to change the laws to suppress more votes.
Right.
So thus we saw that ruling. But the conservative, the ultra conservative members of the court, a little hypocritical in those rulings, if you ask me.
And they even point out, in a, let me see if I can find this here. One second. Here it is. Here it is. Now, this is Alito, with whom Scalia and Thomas join. They do note it is particularly troubling that absentee ballots have been sent out without any notation that proof of photo identification must be submitted. But the court may not vacate a state, blah, 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 legalese nonsense. So they do even point out the reasoning. And that's why we can think that probably Roberts and Kennedy are saying, just don't change things so close to the darn election.
Right. Well, how about we just stop trying to make it harder for people to vote? But
And
maybe that's why I'm not a Supreme Court
justice.
In the
North Carolina case, Justice Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor both pointed out the fact that North Carolina, you guys used to be covered by the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
And if this court hadn't, and we didn't agree with, hadn't gutted the Voting Rights Act, you would have been subject to preclearance and this would have never gotten through.
Right.
And that's why we're saying no
and
to suppression in
North
Carolina.
To circle back to that argument, I mean, we have to remember that Congress has the power to reinstate that portion of the Voting Rights Act by simply creating a new formula to say that if certain people are disenfranchised, you are covered under preclearance.
Right.
But they refuse to do so, even though there's broad bipartisan support. I mean, that was led by Sensenbrenner.
It was. It was. I don't know that there's broad bipartisan support, but there is bipartisan support. But we have a Congress that doesn't do a whole heck of anything. Now, we know in the last election, though, voter suppression efforts backfired.
Right.
Backfired radically.
Right. People did not want to be told that their right to vote was going to be taken away. And so they showed up in huge numbers, waited, you know, up to 10 hours in states like Florida
to cast
a ballot.
We first saw it in Ohio.
Right.
And it was like a light went off. And there's this social psychology of like the Marines or a fraternity or a prestigious golf club that if you exclude people, you know, but it's social psychology. If you exclude people, people want to be part of that more. So by excluding people from voting, people wanted to vote more.
Right.
You know, it's the cookie jar on the top shelf. You know, I want that more. And you normally say, well, that's a terrible way to go about things. And I wish it wasn't that way. But that is one of those things that is the backfire. You may have people saying, you're not going to take my vote from me again. I'm going to do everything I possibly can, and that's the only positive thing I can kind of glean from this.
Right. My fear is that I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Shane, if you remember, but back in 2012, when we saw that happen, and even in earlier elections, most of the voter disenfranchisement laws that we saw passed had more to do with reducing or eliminating early voting hours, changing precinct locations.
Sure.
Here, they have passed a lot of voter ID bills that actually require an ID that voters may not have. So,
first, Wisconsin was a voter ID law.
Right.
So, and that is not going to apply. Second, the Ohio laws are about early voting hours, voting in evenings, voting on weekends, and same-day registration. So there's, I don't believe that's an ID issue. So we won't have it in those two states. And we should watch for Texas coming down the pike. I believe there was a ruling by a federal judge in Texas on their laws.
Yes,
as well.
Was.
So there should be another one. And if everything lines up the way it should, they're going to say don't make changes so close to the election. So we can almost predict what the Supreme Court will do. Almost.
Almost. And I want to mention that if you're in North Carolina, you have only until today to go register to vote. So if you haven't done so, go get out there, go register to vote. Lots more coming up here on the Tom Hartman Program. Me, Danielle, and Shano sitting in for Tom, and we'll be back with more.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Do you think these voter suppression laws are going to backfire on Republicans again? Let us know. Back to the Tom Hartman Program. me, Danielle, and Shano of Talking Left sitting in for Tom today. Tom is just fine.
And we're also here.
Yes.
You know, first
here,
and foremost.
Tom's
here,
producers as well.
Every day.
Tom will be back on Monday, and next week we'll be back to Brunch with Bernie as usual. But we are continuing Anything Goes Friday, as that is Tom's tradition.
Yes.
So I wanted to start off with your calls, starting with Margie listening on Sirius in Wisconsin Rapids. Thanks for listening to Sirius, Margie.
Thank you. While I am doing the absolute happy dance that the Supreme Court blocked the voter ID law, I am concerned that there is still going to be some mass confusion. Part of the problem is that when the original appellate court said, yes, the voter ID law could be enforced, some of the absentee ballots had gone out without that information. However, some of them had not been mailed yet. Those ballots were double stuffed into a second envelope stating that the voter ID law was now enforced. So the people that get those ballots hopefully get informed that that is no longer in place. But there could be some vast confusion on the ballots.
Absolutely. If some people think that they need an ID when
right.
they don't. But I have to say, Margie, you just let a lot of people know who
right.
are listening right there in Madison on 92.1 FM.
So the question then becomes, because the appellate ruling that put it back into effect was October 6th.
Right.
The Supreme Court ruled on the 9th. So the question is, how many were mailed out with the now misinformation during those 3 days?
And
do you know?
It could be quite a bit because some of the major, like Dane County, that was one county that was working to double stuff. And mm-hmm. Dane County, I believe, is the second most populous county in Wisconsin.
Well,
that's Madison.
You know, I think that what's going to have the biggest effect in all of these states is everyday citizens, Margie, just like you and me, helping to make sure that our neighbors, our friends, our family members are informed correctly, registered to vote, and have whatever documents they need, if it's at all possible, in other states where these suppression laws have gone into effect, if it's at all possible to get those documents in time. Like, again, you know, if you're in North Carolina, you have until today to register. You
right.
used to be able to register and vote on the same day. You
right.
can no longer do that.
Right. And what's fascinating is they were doing this double stuffing, which I would assume takes money.
Yes.
It costs money. Yet at the same time, Governor Walker would allocate no state funds to letting people, you know, informing people as to what the rules are. I'm wondering if they're willing to double stuff these envelopes, are they willing to yet again mail out something else? I'm going to err on the side of probably not, unless the county bears the burden.
Right. They're not going to be issuing a correction.
So we'll have to issue them here.
Yeah. And hopefully there are many more people like Margie who are working hard to get that information out there, that if you're one of those voters in Wisconsin that received the double envelope telling you had to provide ID, that is not correct, and you can submit your ballot even if you didn't have it. Margie, I think that's really important, great information. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Sirius. Do we have time for another call, Shane?
You bet.
All right. Let's go with Jim listening in Laurel Hill, Florida, online, perhaps TomHartman.com. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program, Jim.
Well, thank you very much. I've been on before, but it's been quite a while. I'm running here District 1 U.S. Congress against Jeff Miller, the chair of the Veteran Affairs. I'm a combat decorated wounded warrior, and of course I'm fighting an uphill battle here, but I may have a chance of beating Mr. Miller. I'm starting to gain some ground here. I just want to let you know about it.
Absolutely. Do you have a website where people can check out your policies and positions, Jim?
Yes. Go to jimbryan4congress.org, and you can see me there. What I'd like to impress on everybody is this is the home district of Karl Rove and Mike Huckabee.
Oh, wow. Goodness. Well, if ever we needed a Democrat in control of things in a particular district.
Now, this is Florida's first district?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Florida's first district. Yeah, I have some good friends running in other districts around that state, Jim, and we wish you the best of luck. Give out that website one more time.
Okay, it's jimbryanforcongress.org. And, hey, we only have 3 weeks left. It's time to get our butts in gear. If we can flip this district here against Miller, me being a combat decorated veteran, this would have major effects across the United States for 2016.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your service, Jim, and thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program. We wish you the best of luck. So we have got lots more in store today. We're going to be coming back with Andrew Crocker, the legal fellow of the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
One of our favorite groups
to talk about FBI and government spying.
There's actually a case going on right now.
A big case.
Yes, a big giant case. It's actually being tried.
Yes.
I know a lot of times we only pay attention to the appeals court and the Supreme Court. This is where the facts actually come out.
Exactly. So stick around for that. EFF coming up next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And remember, it is Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, 866-987-TOM. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle of Talking Left, filling in for Tom today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. As we keep hearing about ISIS, ISIL, Ebola, national security, it's...
Fear, scare.
It's pretty likely that we're going to hear the government say they need even more ability to spy on us and institute surveillance programs. But we have to remember that they really haven't ever fully justified the surveillance programs that were previously put in place. Joining us now is Andrew Crocker, legal fellow at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. You can check them out at EFF.org or follow them on Twitter at EFF. And you can follow Andrew at A.G. Crocker. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us on the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks so much, and glad to be here.
Very glad to have you. It was big news to me, although I didn't hear too much about it, that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals actually heard one such case this week discussing free speech and national security letters. Can you explain that case a little bit for the audience?
Sure. So a national security letter is a power that's granted to the FBI. And under the Patriot Act in 2001, these powers were sort of vastly expanded. They're like subpoenas, kind of, but they're issued by the FBI to a range of different groups, telephone companies, electronic service providers, banks, and other institutions, and their letters from the FBI saying, give us information about your customers. And one of the sort of staggering things about these letters is they come with a self-certified gag order, which almost all the time says from the FBI, give us this information and don't tell anyone about it indefinitely, and in practice, never. And this comes with these letters 97% of the time, and it's something the FBI can do without going to a court. They can just get this information and issue a gag order just on their own certification that it's necessary. And on top of that, it's something the FBI does very, very often. In the last 10 years, there's been about 300,000 of these.
Wow.
So this is something that civil liberties groups like EFF and the ACLU have long worried about, certainly since the passage of the Patriot Act. And this is a challenge on behalf of two clients that we have, arguing in part that the gag order that I was talking about violates their free speech rights because they want to tell their customers, hey, we've received these national security letters, and we think that this surveillance power might be problematic. It might be abused. And, in fact, there's a lot of evidence from the FBI itself that it's been abused very often in the last 10 years. And so this is something that a lot of companies are wanting to talk about and wanting to sort of issue so-called transparency reports. And in the case of NSL's national security letters, they can't do that because they have this gag order. And so that was something that we brought to a court in 2013, and the court agreed with us and said this was unconstitutional. And then just this week, earlier this week, the appeals court, the Ninth Circuit, heard the government's appeal of that decision.
Now, when most internet service providers and social media organizations have been speaking out against these type of surveillance letters, a lot of people, I think, are under the incorrect assumption that, you know, this is just somebody's Twitter user account or maybe it's a few emails. But according to the information over at EFF.com, this could be banking information, phone records. This could be some very personal data, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It isn't the content of communications. So it's not the content of emails, but it is things like phone records, internet records, bank information. So in the statute that we're specifically challenging, because our clients are electronics service provider, communication service providers, it's so-called subscriber information and toll billing records information or transactional records. And exactly how the FBI interprets the breadth of those things is a little bit unknown because these orders are so secret, but it's certainly the kinds of things that you mentioned, phone records and internet communication records.
Yeah, I mean, that I think most people will consider very private information. Back in 2013, when the EFF and other groups challenged these national security letters, at least one judge has already ruled these unconstitutional. Any thoughts on what the likelihood of an appeals court making a similar ruling?
You know, it's always hard to predict.
Right.
We had this argument earlier this week, and being there in court and listening to my colleague Kurt argue, and then of course the government defend the statute, I think the judges were pretty sympathetic to our arguments. They recognize what you were referring to, which is that these records are private, and they recognize sort of more pertinently to our case that companies do want to tell their customers that this sort of thing is going on and sort of want to engage in advocacy about the effectiveness and the necessity of these powers. So I think that the court was pretty sympathetic to that, at least as a premise. And they were looking for ways to, you know, to meet the First Amendment standards here, which are very strong, but also courts are always very reticent to strike down a statute that's been passed by Congress, even one that's as problematic as this one. So it's hard to say how that'll shake out. I think that we're pretty optimistic that the lower court's ruling finding it unconstitutional won't be totally reversed.
Yeah, I want to quickly remind everybody we're speaking with Andrew Crocker, legal fellow at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which you can check out over at EFF.org. According to the ACLU, the FBI has issued, you know, as you said, hundreds of thousands of these national security letters, but has not made a single terror-related conviction based on the information that they have found. In this current atmosphere of, for lack of a better word, fear-mongering about ISIS, about, you know, terrorist attacks, do you think it's likely that the government is going to further try and justify that these programs, say that they are absolutely necessary to keep us safe despite the fact that they have never use them to make a conviction?
I think that's a sort of a common move on the government's part. Even in court earlier this week, the government attorney said something pretty staggering, which was that they issue thousands of these a year. It varies from year to year, but always in the 20,000, 30,000 range at the lowest. And he said that if they had to evaluate the importance of the gag order that they issue each time, the FBI would cease to function. And in the same breath, he said, but the fact that we issue so many of these a year shows how important they are. And, you know, it is a common move for the government to say these things are highly necessary. And I think that one thing that gets lost in some of what you're talking about is that they may be necessary in given instances. The government has a function to investigate legitimate, you know, terrorism investigations, criminal investigations, national security investigations, and they have a range of powers that are granted to them for these investigations. And it's not that groups like EFF are saying these are never necessary and you should never use these sorts of things. It's just that they should be limited and justified and considered by courts because that's the function of courts. And, you know, another thing that the government attorney said in this argument over and over was that we need these, and if they're struck down, the FBI, you know, will lose this very important power. Well, that's not really true. The FBI has a number of different powers at its disposal, as do other agencies. And the NSLs are just the most problematic of them because of all the components that I was mentioning earlier, the gag orders and so on. And they can go to a court and get any of the same information that we're talking about. It's just that the court will pass on it and actually determine whether it's necessary, which is, as I said, the function of the courts. So I think it is a bit of a red herring to say, oh, these are crucial tools and we can't achieve our, you know, legitimate aims otherwise. And that's just not how these agencies function.
Right. And I think that they all functioned long before national security letters and the Patriot Act were ever even a consideration. And there's also another point. You know, we constantly hear that if the government has to tell us about these surveillance programs, that we are not going to be safe, that terrorists are going to know exactly how and who is being spied on. But it's not like any of these companies, you know, Twitter doesn't want to go to the ISIS Twitter account and say, by the way, the government is tracking your Twitter information. These are just companies that want to say, hey, we've received X number of national security letters and maybe let users know that it's a possibility your information was requested.
I think that's right. I think, to suggest that these companies, Twitter or other companies, are doing this in some sort of bad faith or unpatriotic way is just off the mark. It's an issue about being transparent with their customers, with, you know, sort of making sure that the laws are enforced in the way that they're intended. You do hear a lot the sort of straw man that these companies will notify the terrorists, and that's just not the case.
It's a bit ridiculous. So what can people listening do to help organizations like the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation? Because you guys are one of the primary groups out there keeping this fight going and trying to protect our privacy rights.
Right. Well, I wouldn't be working for a nonprofit if I didn't say we're a member-supported organization, and people can join at EFF.org. So that's, of course, one thing. We have pretty extensive legislative efforts. In that we take positions on proposed bills, advocate for reforms to legislation. So there's a whole section of our website dedicated to that. Exactly what you can say to your congressperson to have them support good legislation and take positions against legislation that would expand powers like this, as is so often the case in Congress. So that's a big part of it. I think you mentioned you were sort of surprised to hear about this case. You can get the word out. You can tell your friends. This is not necessarily an issue that people are tracking, even despite the sort of increased attention to this in the last year. People just don't think about this sort of thing on a daily basis. So I think just getting the word out is a big part of it.
Well, I think that's why we are grateful for organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation and wonderful people like you, Andrew, who are continuing to focus on it because it's extremely important. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Andrew Crocker, everyone, legal fellow at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. You can check them out at EFF.org, EFF on Twitter, and AG Crocker on Twitter. We'll be right back. Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Me, Danielle, and Shano sitting in for Tom today. Give us a call, 866-987-THOM. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Taking your calls from Free Speech TV today.
Yay.
So let's go with Don in Nashua, New Hampshire. Don, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Don,
yes. Okay. Watching on Free Speech TV, on DirecTV, you had some thoughts on absentee ballots.
Yeah, but first, before I get to that, EFF, I'm glad they're out there. They're great people. They're on top of things, and they keep the people informed, and I like that.
Absolutely. They are one of my favorite organizations, and they are always just always have such brilliant people around to speak with. It's an honor to speak with the people working over there.
Yes. And second, there's just way too much problems for one man, being the president, to handle with the GOP on vacation and armchairing from wherever they are. They need to be back in Washington doing their job that they're getting paid for.
Yeah, I would simply that about sums it up. And you the note here in my system said you had some questions about absentee ballots.
I'm getting to that right
okay.
now. I just wanted to make those because as the time as I was waiting. But as far as absentee ballots, if you are on the list to get mailed, this is why what I can't get my head wrapped around. If you're on the list to get an absentee ballot in the mail and you send that ballot back, why would you need to send ID? Because you are already registered to vote.
Exactly. That, I think, is an excellent point in general about this whole...
Well, yet again, these voter suppression laws are solutions in search of a problem.
Right.
There is not a problem here.
Right, but everybody had to prove their identity to register to vote. Signatures have to be matched. There's a process that's been in place, and it has worked for quite some time now until, you know, Republicans went searching for a solution, you know, for a problem that doesn't exist. So.
And one last thing.
Sure.
The GOP is banking on, because in 2012, where the Dems had more votes than they did, they're banking on the gerrymandering that they take it and win it all.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, all of these points, voter ID, gerrymandering, et cetera, are the reasons why we need to get out and vote, because without doing so, we're not going to change that system. We have to take control of it back and fix the problems. Don, I really appreciate you watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV.
We don't really quite have enough time.
Not for another call.
And when it comes right down to it, gerrymandering itself is part of voter suppression.
Yes.
And there is a case coming up before the Supreme Court on this as well.
There's a couple cases.
But it is all part of the same thing. It's to dilute votes, to make sure that Democratic votes mean less. Gerrymandering was part of the Voting Rights Act. If you were going to redistrict, it had to be approved if you were in one of those covered areas. So it's all part and parcel. The ID laws are right alongside gerrymandering. It's the only way they can the Republicans can get a million less votes. Or more than that, even that.
And still have control of the House of Representatives.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that does. So we need more than a million more than.
Yes.
To turn out. And we can do that.
We can. And I mean, I think that's what it all goes back to. Knocking on neighbors on both sides of your house. You know, just get out there, help a couple people, make sure they are registered, have the documents that they need. It's too important. It's as simple as that. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Me, Danielle, and Shano sitting in for Tom today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And Tom will be back Monday. It is Anything Goes Friday, as usual. So please, you know, participate. Yep. This is your day to pick the subjects.
Yes.
And actually, we had Anita in Texas, I think Spring Hill, Texas.
Wow. Great memory.
Anita is a regular caller.
So, I
think it's Spring Hill.
All right.
But she had a question about whether or not Elena Kagan had made the ruling on one of these voter suppression.
I would imagine that it's Ohio because she is mentioned in there. And what the wording of it says, and it's kind of confusing, being given to Justice Kagan and then referred to her to the rest of the court. Justice Kagan did not make this decision on her own. The way it works is, whenever an appeal comes from the intermediate court, the appeals court, you know, like the Seventh Circuit, here, Seventh Circuit or Tenth Circuit or Fifth Circuit, all those circuit courts, there's a number of different circuits that are assigned to each one of the justices. So that Ohio case, that circuit is assigned to Justice Kagan. Justice Kagan got that appeal. She could have ruled on her own because it was a big deal. Out of deference to her colleagues, she referred it to the entire court. Then the entire court ruled on it. So that's what that means. She could have. She didn't.
Interesting.
For example, Justice Kennedy on this Idaho.
Yes.
Same-sex marriage case. He just put the stay on all by himself, having not referred it to the entire court. So.
These quirks and intricate points about the Supreme Court. I learn something every day.
Yes.
Yes. So anyhow, let's get back to callers. And we'll go with Carl, listening on TuneIn in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, thank you for taking my call today.
Of course.
You know, Republicans hate to be called racist. And if you hate to be called racist, stop doing racist things. This voter suppression, it just drips with it. And one of the reasons why I think a lot of people turned out to vote, and you all touched on earlier, is I call it my fried fish theory. I don't like fried fish at all, not even a little bit. So as a child, my siblings would trade food for my fried fish. I'm not just going to give it to you because I don't like it. You understand?
Yes.
And that has been something that we've been trying to people are a little nice about it, but I'm going to say it bluntly. We've been trying to get minorities to get up and shout and vote for years, and it's hard to get them out during all presidential elections.
Yes.
And I believe that the continuous, I thought that the Republican Party was going to see that, you know what, this racist tactic that we tried in 2012, it backfired on us, so we're not going to try it anymore. But lo and behold, they keep trying it, and what it does is it enhances my fried fish theory, and more people are hearing about them trying to take their vote, and they're going to say, you know what, I can't give these guys my vote, so I'm going to get up, I'm going to get out and get registered. But here's something that we really don't even talk about that much. Those people that got registered in 2012, they're still registered.
Yes.
They're still registered in most places. But remember, there's also been these, you know, dropping people from the voter rolls, purging. Thank you, Shane. Seeing, because two names are similar or somebody was supposedly registered in both states. They're doing everything
But the vast majority of people who registered for those elections are still registered.
Yes.
You know, it always makes sense to double check. Make sure you get your letter from the whatever election officials you're supposed to get that letter from. If you don't, check it out.
Right.
But chances are if you registered before, you should still be registered unless you've moved or things like that. So vote, darn it.
Yes. And
what I really take from this, and sometimes you got to take good from bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I take from this that this is the last death breath of an old party that can't relate to anyone else but themselves, and they're trying desperately to do anything that they possibly can to keep people from coming and joining in the franchise because they know that those people aren't going to join in. How about this? How about trying to speak to those people's issues instead of just pushing them over the board and do away with the Southern strategy and try something new like talking to us?
Yeah, you know, Carl, I think you hit the nail on the head
there. It's called desperation.
Right. But you know what? If their policies appealed to more people,
right,
they wouldn't have to worry about limiting the number of people who are voting.
And if their policies appeal to more people, in other words, they stopped appealing just to only the top 1% or top 0.1%, the billionaires, they would stop getting the billionaire money.
Yes.
You know, so.
Well, you know what? I don't think I actually take my yes back. Because I think while they might get slightly less billionaire money, if everybody in Congress actually listened to the will of the people.
Yeah.
Either there'd be the same amount of money to go around and Congress would still be doing our work,
right,
or that billionaire money wouldn't mean so much because it wouldn't have as big of an influence on what gets you elected.
Maybe it just wouldn't come in at all.
Yeah.
That would be a great idea.
Maybe it could be invested, like, in infrastructure and projects and education, but, you know, I guess I'm just a socialist.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, do we have time for one more call?
Sure.
All right. Let's go.
Very quick.
Brian, listening on KGOE in Eureka, California. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program, Brian.
Hi, good morning. You guys are doing a great job in Tom's stead. I just wanted to weigh in on the voter suppression in the Supreme Court. I agree with you very much, the makeup of the court in those three divisions. And when you said, you know, that Roberts and Kennedy saying no to voter suppression this close to election, what that says to me is that they're perfectly fine with it, just as long as it's not too close to the election. So I just want to put that warning out there.
Yeah. Look at the ruling on the Voting Rights Act.
And you're absolutely right, because if these cases, you know, they won't be decided until after the election, but at some point they will be decided in all likelihood. They will take these cases up. They will hear them. And that's when we really need to worry. Do they make these voter ID laws the law of the land, that it's perfectly fine to do this forevermore?
Yeah.
Because all of them will get there.
There's also I heard recently an MIT study done on voter fraud over the last 10 years, and they studied every single election last 10 years. They found 2 to 3 actual cases of voter fraud.
Yeah, you know, Brian, it's a made-up problem. There's just not a big enough return for somebody to go and risk getting in trouble for doing it. But thank you for listening to KGOE there in California and for listening to the Tom Hartman program. We'll be back with David Bender of Progressive Voices. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartmann Program. Yes, Tom is out today. Shano and me, Danielle.
If you're not, he'll be back on Monday.
Yes, of Talking Left sitting in today. And one of the places you can hear our show, of course, is the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. And with it being less than a month before elections, we wanted to speak with the master of discussing and analyzing and getting into the weeds with us of all these election stories, David Bender, political director of Progressive Voices. You could check them out at progressivevoices.com as well as the Progressive Voices on TuneIn channel. David, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We always love speaking with you. So there has been so much negative media saying, you know, there's no chance for Democrats to hang on to the Senate. And I don't want to accept that. What can we do? What races should we be paying attention to save the Senate?
Well, they change from day to day, and that is the nature of less than a month out. A lot of money is being poured in, a lot of Crossroads, GTS, a lot of the Koch brothers money. You know, you follow these tentacles, and they lead to... Let's mix metaphors. They lead to octopuses and hydras. It's just there are many, many headed beasts out there. The distinction, though, Danielle, is that there is still a lot of room for Democrats to decide at the end that they want to come back. It's not that they've left; it's they've been disheartened, and that's, you know, that's how this flame is fueled by Republican money. Is they create this perception that it's inevitable, and if we cast our mind back, we remember that the Democrats took the Senate in 2006, finally with John Tester winning a race in Montana by 2,000 votes. Every single one of these votes counts. So let's start with that. That people who are thinking about whether or not this is an election worth participating in shouldn't even question it. Secondly, a lot of the places that we're looking at, places like Alaska, Arkansas, Kansas, Colorado, which is a purple state, but the rest of them, you know, blood red states, very conservative. People think, well, there's nothing I can do. Well, yes, there is. People can contribute their time, their money. They can use the resources that technology now provides to actually get involved in races where they live and tell people this matters. You're not just voting for Mark Begich in Alaska. You're voting for who is going to chair judiciary, Patrick Leahy or Chuck Grassley. And that's what Democrats need to understand. And to the degree that on your show, on Talking Left, and on Tom Hartmann, people are capable of what I call second-step thinking. You know, you take one action and it has a consequence. Well, here actions have multiple consequences. And if we let this thing slip away, Republicans need 6 seats to take the Senate. It looks right now like they're going to pick up 6 seats. But they may lose Kansas. Pat Roberts is in trouble, although they're bolstering him and they're trying to divide and conquer right now. And we'll see what happens. What I believe, and I'm convinced of, frankly, is that if you can let people know, in the same way the Republicans have tried to make this a national election about a referendum on Barack Obama, who is not on the ballot, you can also make it a referendum about Mitch McConnell and about some of these senators who would destroy everything we care about by chairing committees in the Senate, immigration, foreign policy. Let's move John McCain a little closer to making decisions about foreign affairs, shall we?
Yeah, I'm sure that would work out spectacularly.
Right. So those are those. You asked me what can be done. Look at all of these races. Louisiana is one I'll just mention very quickly. Louisiana, you have to get 50% of the vote in order to avoid a runoff. There's a lot of likelihood that Mary Landrieu, who's always had a tough fight, will be in a runoff against a guy named Cassidy. And that will last a month after the election. That would go through December. I'll tell you right now, a lot of people 6 years ago got in cars and drove down to Louisiana, people who had helped Tim Johnson get reelected, and helped and made a difference and pulled Mary Landrieu out of the fire. It can be done. This work can be done. There are more Democrats in America than there are Republicans. Let's never forget that. We just have to stand up and be counted.
Yeah, I think that's the most important part. I want to quickly remind everybody, we're speaking with David Bender, the political director of Progressive Voices, which you can check out at progressivevoices.com. There's also this strange, or maybe not that strange, happening this year in several elections where libertarian candidates seem to be Democrats' best hope of holding on to the Senate. I know we see that in Kansas with the Democratic challenger stepping out of the race and an independent stepping in, and North Carolina. Do you think that could be a big factor and keep Democrats in control of those very important committees you just mentioned?
It's a factor. The problem that we have in Kansas right now is that Larry Pressler, the former Republican senator, I'm conflating in South Dakota. Larry Pressler, who is running as an independent, not as a libertarian per se, but is drawing from both parties. And this is what you can't ever know, is, you know, there are obviously some libertarian-leaning Democrats and some libertarian-leaning Republicans. And it's a very tough call to make as to who has helped the most. I've never been able to read that one because, you know, when it gets down issue by issue, you get pot-smoking racists. how do you calculate that?
Yeah, I don't know how you work that into a poll.
Carefully.
Yeah. But and these polls in general, just the fact that so many of them are done on a daily or almost weekly basis, they don't often count cell phone users. Should we trust them in general, or should we just get out there and vote?
Well, the answer is that we should just get out there and vote. But in fact, what we now have are measurements of the success of pollsters. Pollsters are being polled. and what you see with people like Nate Silver and Marcos and David Coates have done this, they take the overall track records now. We've been doing this for so long that one of the things the Republicans have been really cagey about doing, Danielle, is to bring in pollsters that no one's ever heard of. They just hire these people to take a poll. It's completely skewed, but then they average that skewed number in to make it look like the Republicans are doing better overall.
Right.
Democrats don't have the money or the time to go out and hire phony pollsters to skew the polling averages. But perception becomes reality. If you think that a candidate is starting to lose momentum, it causes people to decide, hey, my vote doesn't matter.
Yeah, and we just can't.
We have to overcome that.
Yeah, we can't let it get to that point. This is too important. The next 2 years could be even more obstructionist and useless if we lose the Senate. David, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
David Bender, political director of Progressive Voices and one of my favorite people to talk to. We'll be back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Which races do you think are going to turn out differently than all those pollsters are suggesting? And welcome back here on Free Speech TV at the Tom Hartman Program. Let's go with Ferguson, watching on freespeech.org, in Sherman Oaks, California. Ferguson, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Danielle, Shane, thank you so much for having me on. And I'm calling to thank you so much for having Jim Bryan on.
Oh, well, he was nice enough to call. Yeah, he was nice enough to call in. And, you know, there are so many great candidates out there, and there's just only so many hours on the television and radio that.
Especially when the Koch brothers are buying so
many
of them.
But it is important to, you know, hear about those good candidates in the smaller races, because eventually they're the ones running for, you know, federal office and have a lot of control over our country.
Well, I've been talking to him since probably March and, you know, trying to tell the National Party to give him just a little bit of support. Him as well as five or six other congressional candidates in Florida who are not getting the National Party support.
Yeah.
And so it's beautiful that you had him on. I would love to talk about some of those people, but the question that you just asked before you put me on.
Okay.
What are the races? There's a race in South Carolina. South Carolina, first of all, the Democratic Governors Association is spending over $1 million supporting Vincent Shaheen in his run against Nikki Haley.
Yeah. The interesting part is that $1 million in elections these days is like, you know, they find that in the couch cushions, I think.
But in South Carolina, that's kind of real money.
Yeah, it certainly is. It is to any of us.
And so they must think that Vincent Shaheen's got a chance. And he's polling, you know, pretty well against Nikki Haley. So the point is, if he can win statewide, all the statewide races should be, you know, up for grabs almost. You got Joyce Dickerson running against Tim Scott. Now, Tim Scott used to be a representative. He's a black Republican who's been appointed to the Senate seat. He's never won a statewide election. And again, just like Jim Bryan, I've been trying to tell the National Party, look at Joyce Dickerson. She's got a nice chance. She's been in county government for over a decade, and she's really doing the groundwork, the grassroots work to get elected.
Yeah.
The polling, nobody polls that race.
Right.
So the polling is going to be skewed, just like David Bender was saying.
Yeah, you know, Ferguson, there are so many great candidates in these local races that aren't getting the airtime, don't have the money to buy the airtime.
And when it comes down to it, there's not as many billionaire Democrats as there are billionaire Republicans. They're awash in money on that side. No matter what they try to trot out when it comes to Harry Reid, that nonsense that was going on, they're trying to use their resources best they can. It's interesting, he brought up Tim there, that he was one, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was the one who was appointed after Jim DeMint left. Am I wrong about that?
The Jim DeMint seat.
Right.
Special election to fill out the Jim DeMint term.
Got it.
Ferguson, it sounds like you know your stuff, and it is important that people find out that information. You know, if you're not sure who's running against a major candidate in your district, look it up.
Yeah.
Put it into the DuckDuckGo machine and see. There may be a small candidate that you want to support that doesn't have the media money to buy big commercials. We'll be back here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle, of Talking Left, sitting in today for Tom. Tom will be back Monday, and it is Anything Goes Friday. So please let us know what's on your mind. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. And let's get back to some of these great callers with John watching on Free Speech TV in Minneapolis. Thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program, John.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question, and this relates to the Patriot Act and the FBI. I had asked this question before, and actually, if anybody who's listening has any information about it, I'd like to know. But there were a group of people who, across the country, a few of them here, who had their homes raided by the FBI and their computers and cell phones searched. They had to stay there probably 8 to 12 hours while the FBI went through everything that they owned.
Yeah, it was a bunch of activists, correct?
Yeah, and I've really had a hard time finding out, anything, that there's been any kind of follow-up on this. And what had happened was they were ordered to go in this area, to go to Chicago to appear before a grand jury. And they all were within their rights to refuse to go to this grand jury. And the reason that they did, because some of them have been activists since the 1970s and 80s. And what had happened in I think it was 2010, was it was Eric Holder, who may have really been good with civil rights, but civil liberties not so much. And he and the Humanitarian Law Project, which was from Georgetown University, the case went before the Supreme Court, and they ruled in favor of Eric Holder. And the day after, that's when they went through these raids. And, these people, some of them hadn't been outside the country in maybe 10 years. They were in conferences where there was a conference. I know one person, it was a conference between the FARC and the Colombian government, and they happened to be there.
But John, you're just looking. You'd like to know what happened to those people. Did they file suit over their rights being violated, et cetera?
Yeah, and the last that I heard was at any time they could be ordered to appear and arrested and ordered to appear before the grand jury. But it was like 3 and 4 years later. Or 4 years later, and I think the case that they have is really flimsy. But, still, it just astounds me that, you could be, held in contempt of a grand jury and have your home violated and your civil rights violated just for, talking with somebody who's maybe involved in a terrorist group. You may just be wanting to find out for a humanitarian organization.
Right, and,
a journalist, but you're a citizen.
Right.
And I thought, citizens have the right to associate and find out these things. We shouldn't be under the tab of our government. But that's all
right. John, and it worries me when you have people who are protesting the Keystone XL being labeled eco-terrorists. Like, who gets to draw those lines? It is something that we need to have regulators look into, make sure that people are being held accountable when they are violating people's rights.
And when they draw those lines, we often don't know that the lines are drawn, much less how they're drawn.
Right.
That's why what the AFS is doing is so amazing, because so much of it is a secret. How can you challenge something that's unconstitutional when you don't know what they're doing?
Which
so
brings us
ascertain
back,
whether or not it's unconstitutional.
Brings us right back to the original EFF lawsuits saying, hey, the government is spying on you. And the government said, no, we're not.
No, we're not.
Yeah.
You
and then
they didn't
Snowden,
even say no, we're not. They're saying you can't prove we are.
Right.
You can't prove we are.
Hey, maybe
you
somebody listening knows an update in that case that John's asking about. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Minneapolis, John, and for calling in. Always a pleasure to speak with you. Do we have time for one more?
You bet.
All right. Let's go with Dan, watching on Free Speech TV in Tell City, Indiana. Dan, what's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to your conversation today, and an idea just popped in my head. But I was just wondering what your opinions would be about having ballots placed on cell phones and you just vote right from your cell phone. That would take care of some problems of people having problems getting to work, getting to vote, I mean, but at the same time, you got inherited problems with maybe of hacking and...
Yeah, hacking and, I mean, with the problems we already have with electronic voting machines, I don't know if more technology in the process is the answer.
Just think of major stars recently got their clouds hacked and very private photos stolen. I mean, that's a serious, serious offense. Stealing democracy would be even easier.
Yeah,
ballots.
I certainly understand the positives that you're thinking of, that, you know, people wouldn't have to take a day off work and it could reach more people, but there are easier ways, low technology ways, like making it a national holiday, making public transportation free that day. There are easy ways.
Making voting a couple weeks long.
Right.
And in the evenings.
Right. Extending it to reasonable hours that everybody can do.
You can open a gym 24 hours, you can open voting. I mean, this is not that difficult.
Yeah. Gyms and convenience stores should not have better hours to serve the public than
you can get
voting
beer
precincts.
Later than you can vote. That is not I think that's kind of a messed up, tryout.
Yeah. Did that answer your question at all, Dan?
Yeah, I can just see this coming in the future, though. You know, with the young people, you can't even carry on a conversation with them on their cell phones.
Well, so far they haven't even figured out how to incorporate cell phone subscribers into these national polls that we hear about. So I think hopefully electronic ballots on cell phones are a ways off, but you're right, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them at some point. But
I would say cell phone participation rate is quite a bit higher than voting rate. So I do get the point.
Yeah, and it's not just young people anymore who you can't carry a conversation with. But thanks for watching, Dan. We appreciate it. We're going to be coming back with Desi Doyen, co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report. Don't go anywhere. You're watching the Tom Hartman Program, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Is climate and environmental justice actually now a bigger part in these elections this year? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle of Talking Left, sitting in for Tom today. He will be back Monday, and it is Anything Goes Friday. But we were just talking about the elections, talking a lot about them, as they're less than a month away. And somebody, some brilliant individual, pointed out that last major election in 2012, this was the entirety of the climate change coverage.
Climate change, I had that question to all you climate change people. We just, you know, again, we knew that the economy was still the main thing, so you knew you kind of wanted to go with the economy. Maybe the gas prices, again, was something that hadn't come up.
That was Candy Crowley in the 2012 elections, but this year, environmental justice seems to be a big focus. So joining us now is Desi Doyen, the lovely, the talented, the co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report, greennews.bradblog.com, and Green News Report on Twitter. Desi, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Always, always a pleasure to speak with you. So tell us about environmental justice and the fact that some candidates are actually brave enough to talk about climate change this year, although not ones typically with an R after their name.
Oh, definitely not the ones with the R after their names. They are very reluctantly being dragged into the climate change conversation. I mean, as you noticed, back in 2012, it was kind of a big deal that climate change was not mentioned at all during the presidential campaign during 2012. And surprisingly now, this year, in these midterm elections, the media, the corporate media, has finally decided that it's time to ask candidates and get them on record on their position on global warming, climate change, whether they think that it's significantly human caused, whether it's happening at all. And it's been really fascinating to watch the huge backtrack, the retreat, the evasion that all of these Republican candidates are now pulling out, trying to avoid having to answer the question. We covered this on Green News Report. You can look up the episode from yesterday at greennews.bradblog.com, as you said. And you can actually hear, for example, the the Colorado Senate candidate, the Republican, Cory Gardner. He's representative in Congress right now, and he's actually trying to unseat Democrat incumbent Mark Udall. So in the debate moderator said, okay, guys, we're about to go through a round of simple yes or no questions. Yes or no questions. Cory Gardner, do you think that climate change is significantly caused by humans? And he could not answer it as a yes or no. He refused to answer it. And the whole audience, I mean, they almost booed him because they were like, dude, come on, it's a yes or no question. And then the same thing happened with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. He did this twice in the last week. He did it in an interview on the radio where he got really testy with the radio talk show host. He said, you know, come on, dude, it's a simple yes or no question. You know, it's a, it comes from a matter of belief. Either you accept the science or you don't. And McConnell was like, no, no, it's not a simple matter. It's not a simple matter at all. And so he refused to answer it yes or no. And basically they're all trying to pull out some kind of dodge to not have to go on the record because they know that the base, their base, is going to be rabid and not want to vote for them if they accept or even come out publicly as accepting the science on climate change. But I think it's becoming something like a social disease, you know. Basically, denial of climate change appears to be shifting in society where, at least in America, you know, folks are starting to laugh at you if you're an outright denier.
Yes, apparently the I'm not a scientist is no longer an acceptable answer. But strangely, that is more of an answer than we got in 2012. I mean, climate change, obviously, something that the president supports, although some of us would love to see, you know, even more progressive policies. It is a major platform in most Democratic candidates' positions, most, not all. And it affects so many aspects of our lives. There was a story recently, I'm not sure if you caught it, over on Alternet, about how pollution inequality is now greater than income inequality, where even in these congressional districts, which happen to be, you know, often red districts, people are more exposed to polluted air than even the broad gap in income inequality. Did you have any thoughts on that? Is that kind of the environmental justice issues that people should be focused on?
Well, I think it's a new area where people are finally grasping that social justice and environmental justice are inextricably linked. All you have to do, for example, is look at the Gulf Coast. Texas, the Texas refineries, there's an area around Galveston called Freeport where most of the major refineries, most of the oil companies have major refineries there, and the emissions from those areas are egregious. Truly egregious. The the EPA has been trying to work with Texas, which is notoriously favorable to polluters, trying to work with Texas to reduce the pollution. You know, we're talking serious toxic substances like benzene being released into the air. And they're trying to work with Texas to rein in that pollution because there are higher rates of respiratory illnesses, cancers, and all sorts of nasty ailments that actually increase healthcare costs for the public, for the taxpayer at large. So, you know, it's not just environmental justice, it's also an issue of healthcare costs. You know, and these people shouldn't have to live in polluted areas because the industries nearby are not being reined in by the local regulatory agencies. So, you know, when you see it in these areas, you know, these areas where, you know, the poor and the lower income communities are disproportionately located near industrial facilities. They're disproportionately located next to highways, next to, you know, brownfields, next to environmentally polluted areas. And that is well established in studies, you know, for decades now, that the lower income communities are located in these areas and they have higher incidences of cancers, of ailments, of higher health care costs. You know, this is something that is only just now beginning to dawn on a lot of folks who were saying, oh, yeah, that is kind of unfair. You know, maybe they shouldn't be allowed to just pollute indiscriminately in these areas.
Right.
You know, and sorry, go ahead.
I was just, you know, because we see how big of an effect climate change, just human activity, can have on so many issues, so many parts of our lives. I want to quickly remind everybody, we're speaking with Desi Doyen, co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report, which you can check out at greennews.bradblog.com. And you can get it twice a week and get more green news stories than it's almost believable, including some Nobel Prize news, right, Desi?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this ties in also with the environmental justice as social justice concept. You know, so we have poor communities who, you know, at least in the United States, live near polluted areas. They also, in around the world, have less access to electricity, to energy of any kind, except, you know, biomass, which would be like, you know, burning wood or burning, sometimes they also have to burn kerosene. So there's a huge indoor pollution problem in poor countries because there is less access to energy. And one of the things that I thought was really brilliant about the Nobel Prize this year was that the Nobel Prize for Physics went to the three physicists who invented the blue LED, light-emitting diode. That was what made white LEDs possible. They had, you know, not been able to achieve a white LED until these guys invented this. And in 20 years, as you've seen, LEDs have spread not just around the world as light bulbs, but they're also, you know, functionally part of most of the electronics that we use in the modern world, you know, like cell phones, for example. And because LEDs use so much less energy, they make local solar that much more viable for people in the off-grid communities in places like India, where, you know, half a billion people or something are not able to access electricity. So when they have this access to electricity with a super energy efficient light bulb, that is enabling people to participate and to lift themselves out of poverty in a way that was never possible before. And so I think that it's actually quite encouraging when you think about this was an invention that nobody thought was going to happen 20 years ago. They finally got it, and in 20 years, it has enabled a whole host of applications that have improved lives for people around the world, especially in poor countries.
And as these developing countries often, you know, the normal path or the historic path would be for them to use fossil fuels to industrialize, to develop. With some of these newer technologies, a lot of those what we think of as third world nations are going to be able to skip that whole dirty fuel part of their history and just use much more effective, much better, lower cost solar energy because of simple inventions just like this. It really is amazing.
It is amazing, you know, and it does show that technology does have a place, especially technology we have not yet conceived of that can make these changes possible. It is going to be a very, very touchy question whether or not these countries are able to skip over the fossil fuel phase of development because, of course, you know, the multinational oil companies
right.
are not interested in not having those countries buy their products. Coal industry right now in the United States is tanking, but they are really seriously pushing for countries like India and China and in Africa to buy the coal, the U.S. coal that isn't selling here as well. You know, so there's going to be really tricky to see if we can manage to help these countries bypass the dirty phase of development and go straight to renewables and distributed solar for people who are off-grid.
Right.
Because right now the political pressure is extremely strong for them to continue with fossil fuels.
It is, but with, you know, Mitch McConnell may not be a scientist, but the great scientists who work on things like the LED light bulb may make that all possible. Desi, I don't know how you cover all that you do, and you amaze me every time I speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Desi Doyen, co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report, greennews.bradblog.com. We'll be back here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls right after this. 866-987-THOM. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program.
I love this I'm not a scientist thing.
I'm not a scientist.
I know there's a lot of lawyers, you know, in Congress or in the Senate and in the House, but there are a lot of non-lawyers. So if you're not a lawyer, why are you making laws?
Good
you
point.
Know, you know, I'm not a historian, but I can talk about history.
Yes. I'm not a scientist either, but I can understand when science is written out and explained to me, and you know, I can do math and understand numbers.
Yeah, it's a cop out.
It's a lame excuse. If you want to be, you know, anti global warming, anti man made climate change, just
you mean pro fossil fuel, pro coal.
Have the courage to come out and say it. But
right.
The fact that you skirt the issue to me obviously means that you know most people believe otherwise.
Right. And, so, and by the way, you don't believe in climate change. You accept science or you don't accept science. This is not like believing in God.
Right.
This is provable. It's been proven. So either you accept it, you don't accept it. This is not a leap of faith.
Right.
You know, I choose to believe scientists. Come on.
Yes. Right. Anita is back. Anita, thank you for calling back. Watching on Free Speech TV in San Antonio, Texas. I had the city wrong. That's I tried right. to assume. I got close, though. Thanks for calling back, Anita.
Yes, you did get close. Well, thank you guys for answering my question about Elaine Kagan. But I wanted to talk about the election here in Texas, the governor's race.
Yeah.
I think that might be a race that the pollsters are getting wrong.
I certainly hope so, because I adore Wendy Davis, and I would love to see her get the governorship and then move on, you know, eventually after fixing Texas and doing great work there. I would love to see her move on to higher office. She is somebody who just impresses me so much.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of fixing to do, or she will have a lot of fixing to do. But we've been working hard. I mean, I volunteered, and what's weird is Republicans don't seem to have a get-out-the-vote effort at all here in Texas.
Well, is it possible they just think that they don't need
it?
Is this arrogance?
Yeah, it's arrogance. You know, that's the only thing I can assume. Because, you know, I haven't seen anything at all, and nobody I know has within, you know, the people that I volunteer with or that work there. And, you know, we have people from Battleground, Texas, and from the Democratic Party, and we're working very hard to get Wendy Davis elected.
You know, I'm curious, I'm curious, Anita, as you're in Texas, there's been, is he an attorney or a lawyer who's been out there speaking a lot regarding the Ebola victim? He was also one of the...
Oh, the judge.
Judge Clay.
Is it Judge Clay?
Clay Jenkins.
Clay Jenkins.
Jenkins, I think his name is.
Yes.
Yeah,
what's the local response? Because he seems like a great candidate for higher office as well.
Well, it depends on where you're, you know, in Dallas, you know, the local response, I think, has been pretty good. But the rural communities have had, have always had a problem with him. He also spoke out about the immigrant issue
right.
with the children that came across. And so he's just a wonderful man. And I would like to see him and run for higher office. I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Yeah, I say, hey, Wendy Davis for governor and Clay Jenkins.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Forgive me.
And anytime you think of, you know, a red state and say, oh, and you write them off, think of individuals like that.
Yeah.
There's so many of them out there, all of the red states.
He's amazing. Anita, thanks for calling back. That was very thoughtful of you. And get out the vote in Texas. Go Wendy Davis. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle of Talking Left, sitting in for Tom today. And joining us now, the one, the only, Bob Ney of Talk Radio News Service and the author of Sideswiped. Bob, it's so nice to be on the interview side and get to talk to you this time. What's in the news today?
Thank you. Can I bring some good news, at least some bright news first?
Always love good news.
There we go. It doesn't happen a lot, but the Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded, and it's been awarded to Malala Yousafzai, who we all know as the that name became pretty prominent, although it's tough to pronounce, because she was shot by the Taliban standing up for women's rights, and of course she survived that, some grave injuries. But also Kailash Satyarthi, who has really pushed for a lot of human rights issues in India. So you have a Pakistani and an Indian, and although the two countries have had their problems, they're coming together with the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, I heard that news about Malala this morning. I thought that was great. She had some beautiful words about you know, men and women and children speaking up and standing up for their rights. She has been an inspiration to people, I think, all around the world. Good for her. That's right. Awesome. It's amazing.
It's good news. And then also, now you're going to hear a lot. Everybody's going to hear a lot about this threat report on the State Department. And, of course, it's going to be Hillary Clinton and Benghazi. That's what you're going to hear from certain elements in the country. But when you actually look at the report, which is issued today, and it's available online, it's a new report about the threat, it clearly states in the report that the bigger problems apparently lie more with how the new units are integrated. Now, we're talking about embassy security here around the world. And then there was an annual budget to designate high-risk missions of only, and I say only, having served in Congress, $72 million annual budget worldwide, with all of the hotspots, of course, that we have with our embassies and our missions. And also it says that the disjointness extends to the relationships with other parts of the security bureaucracy, and that the State Department has not, to the decision-maker levels, been able to get accurate information in many cases to make risk management decisions.
Now, this new report, is this out of the new committee with Gowdy, or where is this report from?
No, that report would be far different.
Yeah, that's why I was a little surprised.
Oh, yeah. If that happened, the moon's going to turn green and everybody's going to be singing Kumbaya around the world. Now, this is actually an unbiased report, and this is a report that's coming out of the GAO partial and a security report that was issued. So it's a report that really is looking at making some recommendations of how to further enhance security. But I thought the important thing to note there is the information flowing in. And we all know a lot of intelligence information in America historically, endemically, has been not where it should be. So this, I think, although you will read about, Hillary Clinton, because that's the obsession with Benghazi, but I think this report actually will not hurt whatsoever. The State Department, in the sense of the information brought to it, has been really, really tough.
Yeah, certainly. I worry to some degree that people have already just made up their mind, and regardless of what comes out on that, it's not going to change people's opinion much. But I digress. What else is going on in the news?
But I think time will tell, and they'll be able to use that to combat differences thrown at Hillary Clinton in the future here. The other issue that I wanted to raise, because we're hearing about Ebola in Texas, and, there's probably going to be a lawsuit, but that's not as relevant as any mistakes made in Texas need to be not repeated across America, and they're looking at that. But you're just starting to see the beginning, and I saw this on some media outlets, about, what about a travel ban? And the chief of the CDC came out very strong and said, look, if you do a travel ban, it's actually going to not only hurt people in different parts of the world, but it's going to hurt our ability, to do something with the whole Ebola issue. Isolating them will not help us in any stretch of imagination, is what he's saying. And the other thing is that, President Obama, in his speech to the UN a couple of weeks ago, noted the importance of doing something about Ebola, and the United Nations itself is simply, the reports we received today, not really getting it that they need to engage. America's right out front trying to do something. So I think the United Nations is going to need a push from several people to start really engaging a lot of countries in this fight to help the people in Africa, which helps us.
Yeah, absolutely. And the travel ban, that would restrict aid workers from going that direction, from going to help the African countries fight Ebola, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes, it surely would. It would be a real problem. So the CDC came out very strong that, although that might make some people feel comfortable, it will make a greater dilemma, which we'll pay for later on down the road. So I think the big key is that if other countries follow the pace of America, which is to commit resources as we have done, and personnel, this would work a lot better.
Yeah, hopefully they do. A worldwide effort would certainly solve the problem faster.
It would help.
What else is going on?
Well, I wanted to mention, too, the St. Louis issue, another shooting, and there are just two completely different stories. And what's not known now, if the young man did have a gun and shot at the police officer, although the family says he didn't, he had a sandwich, we're not understanding the lack of any reports about, tests done on the deceased's hands, because when you shoot a gun,
yeah,
these residue. And we're not hearing a word on that. So it's pretty quiet still as to, who did what and where. And, of course, it's in St. Louis, which has been a hot spot. And within a matter of a short period of time, the grand jury is going to make some type of ruling on the Ferguson case, so we're just waiting to see what's happening with that.
And it is right before the weekend of resistance, as it's being known in Ferguson, essentially, you know, marking the fact that it's been 2 months since Michael Brown's murder and still no verdict.
That's right. And one other issue I'd like to get in real quick. The Supreme Court has struck the issues of voter ID laws in Wisconsin and Texas. There is a national standard set with the Help America Vote Act, in which case, you know, you can produce a very liberal ability to produce, which is good, a slip showing your address or whatever your last word, the Social Security.
Very good.
They've taken upon themselves to do more. That's been struck down so far in two of them.
Bob Ney, thank you so much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle, sitting in for Tom today. He will be back Monday. And if you think we're doing an okay job, you can check out our show, Talking Left. It's every weekend, every Sunday at TalkingLeft.com, as well as lots of great stations. But you can check all of that out at TalkingLeft.com. And the funny story, last time we filled in for Tom, I changed my Twitter handle.
Oh, that specifically
my
for
Twitter
this,
name,
specifically,
just to
so
make it
easy.
Easier to say while sitting in Tom's chair. And then I forgot to mention it.
So mention it now.
Yes. So if you'd like to connect with either of us on Twitter, you can connect with Shano at Producer Shano and me, Danielle, on radio. So hopefully we'll get more friends and hang out with all of you good people even more. And I want to quickly remind you about a couple things we mentioned during the show. If you're in North Carolina, today is the last day to register to vote. So even if you're already registered, knock on your neighbor's door.
Yes.
Make sure they are too. It's the last day. There's still time. You can head to your local county registrar's office or wherever that may be and go get registered. And if you're anywhere in the St. Louis area, or if you can, you know, get there in the next day or so, it is the weekend of resistance, marking the 2 month anniversary of Michael Brown's death. And there's going to be lots of events today. They are protesting in front of McCullough's office. He is the
attorney general.
Yes. And on Saturday, there'll be another rally in downtown St. Louis, a Justice for All National March. And then on Sunday, it will be the Hip Hop and Hope Day of Action, where hip hop artists, activists, and faith leaders will get together and demand action for Mike Brown and for all of the other senseless deaths.
And while the media attention has somewhat turned away, there are actually some big outlets that are still covering it.
Yes.
And they should be. The protests have gone on.
Yes,
they have. And the local authorities have tried to tamp them down in unwritten rule ways. There was this 5-second rule that they made up that was then struck down. The police officers were saying if you stood in one place as you were protesting for more than 5 seconds, they could demand that you move along. And if not, you could be subject to arrest. The local authorities don't want people protesting. They're really frustrated, I guess, with the First Amendment, and they're trying everything in their power. Unwritten, you know, ad hoc rules to try to get this, you know, to get people to stop. But wait until this weekend.
Yeah, they are expecting thousands. And there was another death as Bob Ney mentioned just a few moments ago, another young black teen shot 17 times.
Oh, my God.
So regardless of the circumstances, which are probably going to take some time to come out, the details, it's definitely going to increase the unrest in the area. But the organizers and activists maintain that they want to keep these events peaceful.
I think the protesters want to keep it peaceful from the beginning.
I agree with you.
We know what set it off.
Yes.
Tanks and AK-47s
tends
or whatever.
To make people a little uncomfortable when you're pointing, you know, an assault weapon at them.
Right.
Just going out on a limb there.
In military gear.
But if you're in the area, you know, snap some pictures, post them on social media, share them with your friends for people who can't make it, and just show your support. But it is Anything Goes Friday, and there's lots of people who have been holding on a long time to get on the show today. So I want to go right to Charles, listening on WCPT.com from Opa-locka, Florida. Charles, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Doing very well. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Charles.
Same here. My thing is basically, you know, everyone has to show up this election season, and don't take anything from Fox News or any of the major, corporate media, because basically they basically buried Obama twice, and he won both elections. And, you know, we have to think of, well, we let everything slide in 2010. And where are we now? They've cut the food stamps. There's no jobs out there. There are phony scandals, you know, and on and on. And if anyone else is, you know, wants to be convinced, you know, they're denying the climate change.
Right.
We need to stand up right now because, you know, what the Supreme Court has done with these two rulings as well is disappointing. And these people are going to get off the bench.
Yeah. Remember who put Supreme Court justices in office. You know,
right. Exactly. Not only, you know, do we need a Democratic president, but we also need a Democratic Senate. And we can also, I believe we can also change what's going on in the House, because people are sick and tired and fed up of what they've done to us in 2010. Although we can only blame one set of people, and independents that lean our way as well. We let this phony outrage take over, and it's stopped us from, you know, producing jobs, feeding our families, and also, you know, making this economy grow for the community, you know, our communities as well.
Right.
So we need to stand up. We can't just believe what's being said on the radio. I mean, and on television, that, you know, we don't have a chance. No, we do have a chance. In fact, they're all scared of us.
Yes. Remember those same corporate networks or corporate organizations that you're saying you can't trust? A lot of them are the ones doing the polling.
Right.
You know,
Dick Morris,
right,
who worked for Fox, and his polling could not have been more wrong. You know, so don't listen to polls. The only poll that matters are the ones we vote at.
Yes.
On election day or before, if you have the opportunity to do so. And what you're talking about here is also, when it comes to the Supreme Court, yes, the president appoints Supreme Court justices. If there is a vacancy during the next 2 years, and if the Senate does turn, David Bender was talking about this, instead of it being Pat Leahy chairing the Judiciary Committee, it will be Chuck Grassley. Imagine the confirmation process for a nominee appointed by Barack Obama in front of a committee chaired by Chuck Grassley. Can you imagine?
Yes.
I mean, if you look at what Sotomayor and what Kagan went through, just imagine. That is something we would like to avoid at all costs.
Yeah, but Charles, we lost Charles. I don't know if he hung up. But thank you for watching there or listening from Opa-locka, Florida. Do we have time for another one?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Let's go with Michael, watching on Free Speech TV in Brookline, Massachusetts. Michael, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for finally taking me. This is important stuff.
Absolutely.
Let me finish. The source of my information is a science magazine. I'm a professor formerly of neuroscience at BU. My information is Science Magazine and also the Center for Disease Control, talking about the quality of medical care in Africa. First of all, this Ebola is new. It's not the same a disease that everybody calls Ebola. It leaped from East Africa, namely Zaire and the Sudan, to West Africa, which is now the coast closest to us. And there are a lot of countries with the disease. It has a lethality rate of between 50 and 90%. So it's highly lethal if you get it. it's hard to, relatively hard to get, although the numbers there are doubling for the disease every 34 days. So something has changed. It's become more communicable. Three of the doctors who worked on the study that I report are dead from Ebola. Now, they're doctors who know everything about the disease.
Right.
So that indicates to me that there's something different, because Ebola has been around for a long time, since at least the 70s. I studied it.
Okay, Michael, we got about a half a minute before we're going to hit a break. So you want to quickly?
If this becomes more communicable, and it's mutating all the time, according to the study, it could turn out to. I think this is a low probability event, but we need to be very concerned. It could turn into the pandemic of 1914, where tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people are wiped out.
So,
because if you get it, you're dead.
Wouldn't national health care be ever more important? Michael, I'm sorry.
Case.
Yeah, we're just up against a hard break, but, it is something to take seriously.
And prepare for the worst.
Yeah.
And, that's all we can do.
Right. But thank you for watching Free Speech TV.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It is Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, 866-987-THOM. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on Free Speech TV. Let's go with Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. How's it going, Paul?
My fault.
Yeah, one more time, Paul. Sorry, we didn't have you up on the board.
Okay. Yeah, how you doing? You and Shane are proof that Tom has excellent judgment in hiring employees.
As are Jim and Sue and Sean and all of the wonderful people who we have the pleasure to work with. It's a great crew. It's
way
an honor.
Too much fun.
Yes, it's an honor to do our jobs.
Hey, it's an honor to talk to you. Shane mentioned a while back that Republicans are getting millions of dollars from billionaires, and you pointed out that money would be better spent on infrastructure. And that fact reminded me of a couple things. The Koch brothers are running thousands of ads lying about the Democrats, and the Koch brothers are also running an ad that they create 60,000 jobs by polluting the planet. Yesterday it was reported by MSNBC that wind power alone creates 50,000 jobs, even though Republicans are blocking investments in solar and wind. Just imagine the millions of jobs that would be created if the Democrats controlled Congress and were able to pass their infrastructure bill.
Are you talking about these Koch industry ads that I keep seeing? Because if you are, that's the ones that say they support 60,000 jobs, not actually create. Or is this a different ad?
Oh, no, that's the one. That's the one. Wow. Okay.
It says support.
Gotcha.
It's that clever language that they don't actually have to say they create.
So the 7-Eleven that's near their whatever coal-fired plant. That's a support
shop at. Yes.
Right. That they get their Slim Jims after work, and that's a job that the Koch brothers support.
Yeah. But Paul, if I remember correctly, you are actually an economist and understand how these numbers work. What would it do for our country if instead of spending money trying to promote 100-year-old technology, the Koch brothers were actually, investing it into newer technology, into infrastructure, into ways that they could still make a buck off of helping our planet instead of destroying it?
Yeah. Well, that was the second part of my point. I did some rough calculations. The Koch brothers have a net worth, the latest figures are $100 billion. Now, I'm not advocating this, but if that $100 billion were put back into the economy, it would create 2 million jobs at $50,000 a year. That's just simple math. I mean, so what is better, the Koch brothers creating 60,000 jobs or infrastructure spending creating 2 million jobs?
And those would just be direct jobs.
And when you're done making those infrastructure jobs, you have something in front of you can drive on, or you can flow water through or electricity on if you're working on infrastructure, instead of just burning something up and having it float in the air and heat up the planet.
Exactly right. And that money stays in the economy. It doesn't disappear just because it's spent one time. It keeps changing hands. The government keeps collecting taxes on it. It keeps generating more jobs with a ripple effect, like you were saying that the Koch brothers are using to claim 60,000 jobs.
Yeah, right. Look at Paul, in South Lyon, Michigan, explaining the money multiplier effect such simple language.
And think about it. If it's no billionaires, we can take 98 of it. How about 98 billion?
There we go. Just 100% of everything over $1 billion. What do they need more than $1 billion?
They each can have $1 billion.
Yes. Paul, brilliant as usual, and just further proof that Tom's listeners are the smartest listeners in the world. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Me, Danielle, and Shano sitting in for Tom today and taking your calls, like Morris listening on KPFK in Long Beach, California. Morris, happy Friday. How's it going?
Well, thank you very, very much, and hello to everybody. But according to the Center of American Progress, a massive voters registration campaign would overcome voter suppression laws and change the dynamics in Washington by the end of the year. And they're suggesting that for a modest $50 million, we can make these facts come to pass. My question to you is, do you have a name or someone you can refer to us that might be interested in something like this?
Morris, I think that dollar figure is a little above the pay grade of most of my friends, but I hear you.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with collectively putting that kind of money together. Yeah, and I know, Morris, you've talked about this a lot. It is a great idea, and it does only take $50 billion. You say, well, $15 billion.
$50
million. M. You say B or M?
No, that's a M, 50 million. Now, I have an idea. Wow. Now, listen to me, folks. There were 22,000 Americans that were convicted tax felons who have money in a Swiss bank account. Mr. Eric Holder negotiated a settlement with them. Of course, no one went to jail because Mr. Holder is a corporate attorney. Now, with that being said, we've got a lot of sharp-minded, skilled hackers in this country, and they're on our team, too. I'm not saying that we go there and steal those people's money. We can't put John the Baptist in that. But all we need is the list. If we can just get a hacker to get us that list and let them know that we have that list, I think that $50 million would present itself.
Yeah, Morris, I think it would be better if we came up with that money through honest means that didn't have to do with computer hacking. And I think we could do it. I think we could do it. If $50 million in the grand scheme of the entire country
When you think that the Koch brothers are putting something like $1.2 billion into this election.
Right. We could come up with it. But this is, if you think back, this is why Republicans first started going after groups like the League of Women Voters, like ACORN, because they knew, these voter ID laws and voter suppression tactics wouldn't be half as effective if voters were still being registered. Right. So that's why they went after those groups first. And we need to create a new system. Put these groups back in place. We need a new updated version of ACORN. We need, League of Women Voters to be allowed to register voters in Florida.
Right, in Florida, they had to pull out because they were so worried about the fines. The fines were so draconian and so automatic and so ridiculous.
Right.
They're like, we can't afford this.
Right. But more.
We're up against people.
Go ahead.
Do you know what we're up against? We're up against people that have no morals.
Mm-hmm.
They have no character, nothing. They'll kill you. They have no really, and we're coming to the task with John the Baptist and good behavior and good, and that's all good stuff. I go to church. Well, we have to recognize who we're dealing with.
I completely agree, but Morris, that's all the more reason why we shouldn't stoop to their level. You know, I
can appreciate that.
I understand the fire with fire, fighting fire with fire.
I completely understand. I completely understand the sentiment and the desire and the frustration, but that's why we have to be even more,
you can turn that
have
energy,
even more integrity.
That desire, that energy, you can turn that around into something positive.
You're darn right.
And, in above the board way of doing things.
Right.
Because I'll tell you, if you really did go about it that way, and I understand the sentiment, I understand the desire, I think you would actually turn off voters. Voters are turned off right now. All you have to do is say, this person's Koch funded. And people saying, I've got to take a second look. Maybe I'm not going to vote for that person. If the Democratic Party used some kind of tactic to get this money, that's what bringing ACORN down using those means was all about. Was to they lied, they cut tapes, they did all kinds of nefarious things to bring down ACORN. But brandishing them and putting that negative light on them is what brought them down. It was bad publicity that brought them down.
Right.
If we were to do something that was nefarious to get this type of money, I think it would bring us down. So we go the positive route. But I understand, you know, $50 million to get everyone voted.
You know,
voting, that'd be great.
There's what, 300 million people in this country?
There are. 320.
I'm not sure off the top of my head how many, on average, people are registered as Democrats. But if everybody gave a buck,
right,
you know, it wouldn't be, or two, whatever, you know, the math works out to be, it wouldn't be that hard to come up with that amount of money, honestly. But Morris, I hear you. And hey, if somebody out there is listening with $50 million and wants to do it, honestly, Center for American Progress apparently has some great ideas, as does Morris in Long Beach, California. Thanks for listening, Morris. We always appreciate it. Let's go with Linda, who's been waiting for some time in Denison, Texas. Linda, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for having me.
You had some thoughts about, I'm guessing, Ebola?
Yes.
Okay.
I am an American Indian. That was, my ancestors were sent on the Trail of Tears to the Oklahoma Territory. My people moved to Texas. I worked at Texas Presbyterian Hospital because before it was called Texas Presbyterian Hospital. I am a registered nurse.
Okay.
At that time, everyone that came into the emergency room were treated with respect and with isolation. We didn't know what they had. Nursing schools now just want to put nurses out.
Well, and a lot of them, Linda, aren't even nurses anymore. They're nursing assistants. And that's a lot of these corporate hospitals, you know, will have one RN and then several nurses assistants working under that person.
And those nurses that have gone to nursing school are not being taught proper isolation.
Well, I suppose it depends on the school. I'm sure some of them are. But what year, you know, how long ago were we talking that you said people were treated with respect?
I'm talking about in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. In the 80s.
What happened in the 80s?
It always seems that so many big changes occur right around then.
Of course, that's the time when all the for-profit hospitals started popping up, and we realized that sick people can make corporations lots of money.
Yeah. Linda, I appreciate your thoughts. I'm sorry we're out of time, but I don't think it's a big surprise that profit in healthcare hasn't worked out really well, and it makes it the scariest part of Ebola. So we'll be back with more. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Elections, Supreme Court, Ebola, what's on your mind? It's Anything Goes Friday. Give us a call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle of Talking Left, filling in for Tom today. Tom will be back Monday. He is just fine. He's just out of town for a few days, and he will be back taking all your calls and, you know, talking about all kinds of brilliant stuff like always here on Monday. But it is Friday. Anything goes, as Tom says. So we're going with your calls. And next up is Bill, watching on Free Speech TV in Sebastian, Florida. Beautiful area, Bill. Thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Danielle. I'd like to just comment on this Governor Scott down here and his inability to answer any questions concerning, his Medicare fraud.
Yes.
And I'd also like to comment on his apathy when it comes to raising the minimum wage and the mental competency for some of these police officers of late. It's gotten terribly out of hand with but it isn't brutality anymore. It's a murder.
Yeah.
And there's got to be something done, some sort of competency test, psychological testing, or something for these people.
Yeah. On the subject of Rick Scott, I can certainly relate. I'm a Florida native, which even people who live in Florida don't see very often. Everybody's usually from somewhere else, but born and raised in Florida myself. So I understand your frustration with Governor Voldemort. Yes, largest Medicare fraud in history, over $1 billion. And Rick Scott on the stand said, I don't recall or didn't answer a question more times than Alberto Gonzalez did, if you can remember that interview and the, yes, the fame yes. of how many times Gonzalez said it.
Yeah, there's just something terribly peculiar about the man. Just him and the other Scott up there in Wisconsin as well, you know. Unions enhance democracy, and this guy up there in Wisconsin, he's doing everything he can do to decimate the unions.
Yeah,
he's got to be really upset, Scott Walker, today.
Oh,
I mean,
cry me a river.
He's like, Ohio's going to get away with it. North Carolina's going to get away with it, you know, unless we show up. But yeah. Wisconsin, nope. You're not going to be able to suppress the vote there, Governor Walker, and maybe soon to be former Governor Walker.
Formally, it'd be about time, as many times as they've tried to recall him.
They've tried to recall him once, and people didn't vote. It's been shown that people were just against the process of recalling. Not actually recalling. This was not, hey, we like Scott Walker as our governor. We just don't like the recall process.
Well, in Florida, they don't even have the option. There's,
right.
there's not
Many
even a recall option, or, you know, he would have to have been completely impeached. But I'm sorry he just dropped off the board there, but thank you from Florida. And there are great candidates. I want to mention a friend of ours who actually wrote the book on Rick Scott, like literally
yeah.
Wrote. I forget the exact name, but his name is David Kearns, and he's running for office as well at one of the local races there in Florida, K-E-A-R-N-S, standing up for progressive values down there in Florida in the Palm Bay area. So let's go with Maggie listening on KBAI in Bellingham, Washington. Maggie, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, thank you. Good job, Danielle. Good job, Shano.
Thank you.
I want to talk about a couple of topics. First of all, we invite people to look at more recent events than the 1914 outbreak of the Spanish flu, i.e. The polio pandemic. Over 500,000 people died. The height of the polio crisis was in 1952. And I know a man who was an intern at a medical intern. He's a physician at Harborview, and he tells a story of walking down the hall, trying to walk down the hallways of Harborview with tears running down his eyes out of hopelessness, fear, and fatigue because he had to move beds in order to make a step, move another bed in order to make a step. In other words, all the wards were filled and all the hallways were filled with beds with people of all ages. And if you look back, a number of healthcare workers, physicians, nurses, et cetera, contracted polio. Polio is much more transmissible than HIV, much more. And Jonas Salk was a humanitarian, speaking of Nobel Prizes, enough to make that vaccine and charge nobody a dime for it, which is a comment on Big Pharma. And so let's look at how that particular pandemic was handled rather than going all the way back to 1914, where things were didn't have the capacity to handle things quite as efficiently. Another thing I want to do, which is sort of a bomb, I want to make a connection between climate change, Ebola, and the mismanagement, the human mismanagement and misuse of natural resources.
Yeah, absolutely. That was something I intended to talk to Desi Doyen about, but we just ran out of time about how deforestation and climate change have
the particular strain of this mutation of Ebola is by one school of thought in the science of epidemiology. In part as a result of deforestation in that West African location, which is also multinational corporations decimating and deforesting the areas there, and thus those the viruses that come up out of there are no longer local. They become widespread. So that and. Here's a little thing about Washington State. Anybody who applies for care, i.e. Welfare, food stamps, housing help, anyone who is eligible is registered to vote. And if you put down an address, even if it's general delivery, put down an address on those applications, you become a registered voter. Those ballots are sent out by mail, and you don't have to put a stamp on them to get them back to the place that they need to go to after you have voted. So I think that the USPS, Postal Service, can do us all a big favor if we would let them.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say.
Maggie, I think you you gave a lot for us to digest there, but I think we, you know, we did get the polio epidemic under control. We have the technology, the capability to handle the Ebola epidemic as well.
A couple interesting points in there.
Yeah.
Jonas Salk, first of all, University of Michigan. Well, I don't remember. I had
to put that anytime you get a chance to mention it, Shane.
But also, we had a caller a little while ago talking about what has changed. Why is it that this has moved from Eastern to Western, and said, well, this is something to be scared about. What you've just said here with deforestation could be a reason why. The changes in the environment could be the reason why, other than just the mutation of the virus itself. It may not be more communicable. It could be the environment around us has made it more communicable. That's one thing that I gleaned away from there.
It could be, you know, lack of adequate health care. It could be, you know, not having somebody like a Surgeon General to educate the public and make sure that we all know how this condition is spread and how we can stop it. But, Maggie, there was just so much great information, especially on the voting rights. We could learn a thing or two from Washington State. And thank you very much for listening over on KBAI. Let's go. We have time for another one, right?
Sure.
Let's go with Jesse, watching on Free Speech TV in Miami, Florida. How's it going, Jesse? Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday to you all. You and Shane are the best.
Thank you. And Jim and Sean and Sue and all of the and Troy, who is helping fill in and cover the phones and being a great backup here today.
Your guys are number one. Hey, you from Florida, too. So, hey, let me put in the plug for Fari Kavari. He's running for governor against Mr. Scott. So he's a good man. Hey, the main point being, Mr. Obama, I voted for Mr. Obama when he said, I'm going to go for a trickle-up economics. That was the number one reason I voted for him. He said, no more trickle-down. So we done went to, he tried it. He went up against the new Confederacy. No way, no how.
Yeah, it's been an uphill battle almost quite literally. You know, everything he's wanted to pass. And I'll be honest, I've got plenty of things that I could criticize the president over, but I'm not detached from reality to say that he didn't try and pass better legislation and was blocked at every turn. But trickle up, I think, you know, that whole idea that wealth as a nation is built and becomes much stronger when the lower rungs of the triangle, the lower rungs of the pyramid, the everyday person has money in their pocket to contribute to the economy.
This is the main, this is what the Achilles heels of the progressives. We know the present system don't work. So what is trickle up? I think Bernie and most people realize cooperative economies will do it. But how will cooperative economy work being competitive? It can't work because it's non-sustainable. We only have one earth. So the only way to do it, I would say, is invest to be civilized instead of investing to be greedy.
Well, but, you know, we may not have to take the leap to a cooperative economy where some people might confuse that with communism.
Mm-hmm.
But co-ops, employee co-ops, you know, worker-owned businesses are a great way for everyday people, for just like you and me, to have a stronghold on their future and their economic choices. And you know, they're popping up in lots of places.
And it also changes that stakeholder structure.
Yeah.
Because as an owner and an employee, two of the stakeholders are embodied in one person. And therefore, and you also want to suit the community. So it's not just a shareholder-based system. Doing it step by step is just fine. There was just a co-op in the news up in Maine just within the last couple of weeks.
But trickle up, I think, is a great idea. And, Bernie, great stuff, Jesse. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We will be back with more of your calls. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Let's go with Frank, watching on the Dish Network in Montello, Wisconsin. Frank, am I pronouncing the name of that city correctly?
Yes, you are.
All right. Good try. Got it. You know, guessed it correctly. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to talk about the ruling, non-ruling from the Supreme Court here in Wisconsin. I was tickled as heck last night to see on the news that we do not need voter ID, much to the chagrin of Scott Walker, I'm sure. And one of the other things I was going to point out is that I'm seeing, as one of your previous guests on here pointed out, that sometimes they skew the polls, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening in Wisconsin here. They're putting Walker ahead in the polls to discourage people that would get out and vote to not get out and vote.
When you have a party that is who wins election based on suppressing votes, we played Paul Weyrich in the first hour. You've heard it a lot here on Tom's
Pro. That's about all I have to say. Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And if you win elections based on suppressing the vote, one way is to keep people from the polls with all kinds of suppression laws. Another way is to just bring everyone's attitude down. Negative ads and polls that say you're going to lose anyway, so why bother? So you get a bunch of Republican pollsters out there, the Dick Morrises of the world, who are actually conducting polls not to gain information, but to push information.
Right.
And to come up with skewed numbers. And they don't, if they're getting paid enough, they don't care about their reputations.
Well, Frank, thank you, by the way. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV and for watching the Tom Hartman Program. I think we just need to distinguish, you know, there is a difference between legitimate polling organizations right. that use science mm-hmm. and CNN, NBC, Fox News polls. You know, those are polls done to a specific audience. They are not as scientific. They can tend to be push polls.
The ones that are hired by the party that are added to the overall average, like David was talking about, that throws off the whole thing because right. you only have to move it a little bit. A lot of these are tight races. And tight races are the ones that Republicans fear the most.
Right.
Because we can turn out the vote. Democrats can do it. We have done it. And so if they can throw it off a percentage or two, say, hey, we got a 65% chance now if you add all those up of taking the Senate and Democrats stay home, they can have another 2010. We don't have to have another 2010. We can show up.
I agree. Do we have time for another call?
Sure.
All right.
Quick.
A quick one. Let's go with Bruce watching on the Dish Network in Atlanta, Georgia. Bruce, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Quick question for one or both of you. Shane earlier on mentioned something about law enforcement with tanks. Do you have any stock footage actually showing a tank that any law enforcement agency in the country actually has?
MRAPs used in Ferguson, Missouri. Yeah. I think most people would be comfortable calling that a tank.
It's an armored vehicle.
Okay, semantics.
All tanks are armored vehicles. Not all armored vehicles are tanks.
Okay. Do you think most people on the ground in Ferguson could have distinguished that difference?
If people like you would actually explain it accurately, yes. They're not stupid. I know I'm not.
All right, Bruce. Well, I think it's a bit of semantics. I think to most people when you
And I will confess my hyperbole.
Yes.
But I will tell you that the armored vehicles are just as good at killing me as a tank is.
I will just say both are military equipment. I'm sorry, Bruce, we're out of time. But
but I will confess my hyperbole.
You know, I'm sorry. I think it's semantics. That's my opinion. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, Danielle, sitting in for Tom in the last few minutes here. So let's go with Kenyatta, watching on Free Speech TV in Redlands, California. Kenyatta, thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Why, I am your loyal subject, Danielle. And by the way, I've listened to you on the radio before. I've called in and spoke to you, but I have never seen you other than today. You are beautiful.
Oh, you are going to make me blush.
Listen, I wanted to talk about something that is not being talked about. And whenever things aren't talked about in totality, I worry. And let me get right to the crux of the matter. There have been numerous instances of police misconduct. This is nothing new to black people. In fact, I think it was Langston Hughes that once said that justice is a blind goddess, is a fact to which we blacks are wise. Her blindfold hides two festering sores that once perhaps were eyes. The blatancy of these police officers and these murders of young black men and the total picture, and I'm thinking about this Ebola patient, a patient recently that died, and you know, obviously his treatment seemed to be different than others. There was an infant that was injured by a flashbang grenade. I'm sure you remember that story.
That was an awful story. Yes, I do remember. And, of course, now the courts say that the police aren't liable for that. Unbelievable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, you know, you had this cop breaking glass with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is how blatant these acts are. And gun sales are up. And it's, you know, as a black man, I mean, Woody Allen once said that just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not after me. You know, I'm really concerned about what is going on, because when Barack Obama became president, one of my great concerns, and by the way, I voted for him, I raised money for him, whether or not I think he, you know, disappointed me or not is another matter. But I was very concerned that it would be a net loss for race relations. If you'll recall, Mitch McConnell made the very famous statement that my job is to see that he's a one-term president.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that now being impossible, I think the next stratagem is to make sure that it never happens again. And I believe there is going to be a white backlash in 2016 that none of us can foresee. I'm very concerned about the basically civil, for lack of a better term, civil war in this country. There is something going on, and it is not good.
Yeah, the one part I wonder, and I certainly don't have the answer. This is a genuine question. And you as a self-identified black man would know certainly better than me, is this a situation where the media is reporting, doing more reporting of events that have constantly been taking place, that these police brutality stories are things that were going on every day and the media is finally picking them up? Or is the epidemic of police brutality actually getting worse, actually growing and seem to be more racially charged? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think both are correct. I think that we know as a black man, I can tell you, and as a former person who worked in law enforcement, I attended a police academy, and I can tell you that, first of all, you're dealing with people that generally, not to be disparaging of people with high school diplomas, but what I'm saying is that when you have someone trying to interpret the law, trying to execute the law, and sometimes very exigent circumstances, that requires a great deal of education, of ability to handle information, assess a situation, and you're not going to get that for $40,000 a year with somebody with a high school diploma. What I found in the police academy, despite the what you see on television, is that these guys are itching to kill somebody, itching to what F somebody up, as I often heard.
Right.
On the other hand, is the so I think that because, you know, this happens with relative impunity, I think it is probably happening more, but understand that it has always happened. Particularly, you know, if you think about any time there's been any civil insurrection or civil disobedience by blacks, almost exclusively it's been as a result of police conduct.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, right now, black men, it seems to be open season on us. And I very much feel like we are under siege.
I
just don't know what the end result of this is going to look like, but I can tell you it doesn't look good. And Danielle, can I say one thing about the tank comment?
Certainly. For our radio callers may not have heard that, but the difference between an MRAP versus a tank that was used at the Ferguson protests. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that that's nothing new either, because back in the 70s, we had a very colorful, for lack of a better term, chief of police here in Los Angeles by the name of Daryl Gates.
Yeah.
And Daryl Gates was the first police chief to, first of all, come up with air support or helicopters, and secondly, which are military tactics, and secondly, with something called a battering ram, which was a tank used to
You know about that. And
if you're watching television, Jim is putting pictures of police tanks.
I think, Kenyatta, we are really close to the end of the show, but you are certainly a scholar, and it's an honor to speak with somebody who really knows this stuff as well as you do. There's so much to try and digest in that comment, and as a white female, I'm probably not qualified to speak on much of what you said, but I do agree with you, and I think that it's a growing problem. I'm happy that the media is covering it, mm-hmm. that it's not going away. I'm happy that there's still people standing up in Ferguson and saying that Black lives matter, because they do. If we just let the issue disappear, it's certainly not going to get fixed.
And there are ways to fix it.
Yes.
Community oversight, having citizens oversee the police in a criminal way, but in an oversight type of way. The impunity under which they act, maybe some of those rules need to be changed, those protections. Being a police officer is a very difficult job. But at the same time, you are asked to make those judgment calls, and you should make those judgment calls wisely, and you should be held into account.
Yes.
Those are just a couple of them.
They are great suggestions, and lots of good people are working on those issues, thankfully. Thank you.
And also residency requirements.
Sorry to the callers that I didn't get to, but Tom will be back on Monday. Big thanks to Tom and Louise for allowing us to sit in, to Sean, to Sue, to Jim, to Troy for helping us today, to all of the callers and all of the fun people in the chat room. We really appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Get out there, get active, go vote.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.